must end their ability to write the rules of climate action. We must end their ability to bankroll these climate talks and reset the system so that it can finally end fossil fuels and advance real solutions and save millions of lives that don't need to be lost.
Well, Rachel Rose Jackson, we thank you so much for being with us, Director of Climate Research and Policy at Corporate Accountability and the Kick Big Polluters Out Coalition. Release their report, Record Number of Fossil Fuel Lobbyists at COP28. We'll link to your report. A special happy birthday to Igor Marino. I'm Amy Goodman.
Cannabis is now legal in New York for those 21 and over, but we need to be mindful of where we use it. Secondhand smoke can impact those around you. For more information, visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 megahertz and 107.3 megahertz, as well as over the internet at WUSB.fm. Time is 6 o'clock. It's a Tuesday evening. That can only mean one thing. Either we're preempted or it's time for Off the Wall. It's the latter. Well, that's about enough of the theme, I think. Good evening. It's another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Indeed, right here.
Wow. This has been quite a week since last week, and threatens to be another week this week. Where do we begin? Well, first of all, business out of the way. This is kind of important. Radiothon is still going on. That's where we ask you, our listener. I should have pluralized that, shouldn't I? Yeah. Take two. Where we ask you, our many listeners, to call us or go to the website wusb.fm and pledge your support, because doing that is how we stay on the air, and it's how we have stayed on the air since 1977.
And we're not asking you to pledge anything else.
We're telling you.
Oh, just
no.
Just support for the radio station.
Yes.
It's not any kind of allegiance or oath. Well, you're kind of signing on.
Wait, have people been
worried
about that?
There's no contract. There's no... Well,
when did that rumor start?
There have been a couple letters that... You know what? I'm not going to bring this up. Uh-huh. This isn't the show on mail to the radio station. But the idea is you contribute a couple dollars, maybe on a recurring basis, and it helps us out a lot.
Yeah, definitely. If you pledge, say, $5 a month, do the math. Oh, I left the calculator in the other room. Got the pencil? Hold on, I like this. I can do this. I have to do this. 5 times 12 is 50, plus 5 times 2 is, that is a trick I learned, 10, so that's 60. $60 in a year. Yeah. And there's people out there that do math better than me who could maybe, you know, afford to pledge more. $10 a month. That's double what I just said. So that's $120. And that sounds like a lot. And it is a lot. But if it's $5 a month or $10 a month, it's bearable. I think we said a couple of weeks ago, it's like a cup of coffee.
I was going to bring that back up. Yeah, that was a great analogy. You're basically adding another cup of coffee on to your budget. But this cup actually buys us more airtime, more power, more other kinds of maintenance and vital parts of the production process. You're contributing, your say matters, and this is a great way to give at the end of the year here to a wonderful local nonprofit.
Okay, I've got it now. Pledge $5 a month. It's like a cup of coffee, but it tastes so much better. Huh? That's good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's what we're going to go with.
Taste with your ears.
Exactly. Yes, taste with your ears. What, there's people who can do it better? All right, let's see what they got.
You can either call or go on our website, www.wusb.fm.
Well, that is so much better than anything we did. Wow. Donate to the radio station. Why didn't we think of that? It works so well. One thing, though, I don't have many notes, but I think they got the phone number wrong. I was listening to it. It was hard to hear. But the phone number is 631-632-6901. Yeah, I think that's the number. And if nobody answers that line, which sometimes happens, because, again, we're all volunteers here, the website is always up, wusb.fm, and there's a big button there for you to contribute to start your donation process. And it's really awesome. We appreciate all of our listeners who do that. And I think this is the last week we're doing Radiothon, so please give us a call or hit that website and keep WUSB going strong.
Every little bit matters, and we thank you so much. So keep listening, stay tuned, get that pledge in, $5, $10, recurring, whatever.
$50. You know, I'm told $50 times 12 is a number I can't even fathom, but it's, yeah, it's a lot. 600? Is that really true? $600 a year. If somebody, wait, somebody pledges $50 a month, which I know people who can afford that. That's like a $600 pledge to us. You know what a $600 pledge would do to this place?
Yeah, it would just substantially increase some of the resources we have. And I've been hearing a lot about the self-matching program where people match a contribution that they're going to make. They match with themselves.
They match with themselves.
Yeah, so they pledge a certain amount and then they double it.
What, they're meeting their, they're challenging themselves?
It's a great technique to really double those efforts.
Okay, yeah, if you have split personalities or whatever, this is a great way to take advantage of that and help the radio station at the same time. One more time, wusb.fm, that's our email address. And okay, so let's get into some of the things that have been going on this week. I guess, you know, of interest locally, yeah, George Santos is gone. we're not going to spend much time on this, but yeah, finally, more than a year after they elected his lying ass to Congress, the people of Long Island are getting justice in having him booted. He was voted out by his peers, pretty handily, I think, and that's a good thing. You know, I hear people saying, "Oh, but he wasn't found guilty. How can you know in a court of law?" You know, this would never fly, but it's not a court of law. You see, it's a work environment. And, you know, if I do something that upsets people in a place that I work, then they have the right to act accordingly, you know, as far as their particular rules and standards go. And it doesn't necessarily have to be what happens in a court of law. And I don't have to be found guilty of anything. I don't have to be charged with anything. If a particular group of people that I am involved with finds me to be distasteful or disrespectful or whatever, they can conclude that. It's part of the rules. I can be a part of that too. I can condemn somebody else. In this particular case, it sure seems like he had a whole lot of evidence against him. And, you know, he has court cases coming up, so we can see how those turn out. But, you know, it doesn't really befit somebody in Congress to be going through all of that. So, yeah, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, think about what you're advocating. If you're unhappy with the order of operations here, this institution, and I think as a matter of the kind of decorum that they would typically have as a standard, what we should expect of this place and the reason for these policies is to preclude someone being a convict in office. You typically, it would be a bad look, right, for them to have still maintained that position without some kind of repercussion. Any other employer, though they would have different sorts of processes, would feel the same way about having someone that was going through something and then convicted and still in a position of responsibility, depending, of course, on varying degrees. The degree here is pretty stiff, high octane. So there's a lot to go on, and it's, I think, long overdue and appropriate. And people in New York expect better, I think, and that's the collective dissatisfaction here that is now put into action with this removal.
And again, the vote was pretty handily against him, 311 to 114. With a whole bunch of Republicans joining in as well. But I think everybody who voted for keeping him there were also Republicans. So that's rather shameful. But, you know, he got in kind of, it was a rather unique circumstance that brought him in. And he was not expected to win, but he did. Part of the whole red wave, I guess, that enveloped Long Island over the past two elections. And this is a chance for Democrats to win that seat back. If they actually do something, if they actually campaign, if they actually motivate people to get out and vote, and if people themselves, because, yeah, the responsibility lies with people as well as the party officials and candidates, you've got to motivate yourselves to get out there. Even if you're not thrilled, even if you disagree with certain things, it's so important to get out and vote and change things if you feel they're going in the wrong direction. And so many people I talk to believe that, but they think they have no voice. They think it's hopeless. They think it's preordained. And that's nonsense. Now listen, Valentine's Day. What's the date of Valentine's Day, Kyle?
February 14th.
Okay, you got that very quickly. Now, let me ask, what day is a special election to replace George Santos? Not as easy, but I have a formula. If you subtract one from Valentine's Day, that's the election day. That's the special election. All right? So Valentine's Day minus one. That's when people on Long Island, in that particular district, I don't think locally here, but further to the west, that's when they can turn out and vote for somebody else. And there will be a Democratic candidate and there will be a Republican candidate.
You better believe the field, however large and confusing, is going to be well vetted, and a lot of investigative and political reporting will be done, because that was arguably where they fell short in that district as far as getting the right person.
Now, you know, basically they're saying that it's likely that the candidate for the Democratic side, chosen by the party, and again, who will have to run for re-election next year when the congressional seat is up for that. It's predicted that it'll be former Representative Tom Suozzi, who had the seat before he decided to run for governor against Kathy Hochul. Many felt that was a stupid thing to do. Many thought that was a harmful thing to do. But if he winds up being the candidate, and if I were living in that particular district, I would say, yeah, you know, it stinks. That was a dumb thing to do, but the alternative is worse. So rather than vote for the other side and have them retain control in Congress, which is not working out well, or sitting it out and basically having that result happen because people sat it out, yeah, hold your nose a little bit and vote for somebody that you don't quite like as much as you want to, because it's better than what happens if you don't. I know a lot of people have trouble with that particular, you know, a chain of thought, but that's the secret. That is how you, you know, you get the policies you want, is by compromising, electing people who are maybe taking a half step in the right direction, as opposed to as many steps as you want to take. We have to realize we can't take all the steps at once. And half a step forward is better than two steps back.
Fully.
Yeah. More locally, though, it has been announced that Democrat Kyle Hill, in fact, it was announced today, he has declared his candidacy for the 1st Congressional District. That's the one that covers Stony Brook, and that's the one currently held by the Amityville Horror, and I continue to call him that because that's where he's from, and he doesn't even live in the district. Representative Nick LaLota, who was elected to replace Lee Zeldin last year. Not as bad as Lee Zeldin, I will say that, but still bad enough. And this guy, Kyle Hill, first of all, okay, wow, I can actually remember his name. But that shouldn't be a requirement. But single-syllable names definitely resonate a little easier. But again, is he a good candidate? Well, we'll find out, I suppose. He's a former congressional staffer from Port Jefferson. He's the fourth Democrat to challenge freshman GOP Nick LaLota in next year's election. Yes, there's three other candidates. Okay, Nancy Groff, former Stony Brook University Chemistry Department Chair. You know, she's great. She'd make a terrific congressperson, but she lost big to Lee Zeldin. And I don't think it's a good idea to run candidates who have lost big in future elections. It just sounds like, yeah, we're just going to do the same thing again. And she didn't really campaign that much. I don't want to see the same thing happen. I want someone to be aggressive. I want someone to be loud. I want somebody to be challenging. You know, it's necessary. And running someone again probably isn't the right move. I'm not saying Kyle Hill is better. We have to find that out. There's still two others. There's James Gaugrin, a former state senator from Huntington, and Craig Hershkowitz, who was most recently a New York City administrative law judge who lives in Northport. So, interesting race ahead, but the thing is, people have to get involved early, and people have to get involved aggressively. And we can't just see the signs for the Republican candidate all throughout Long Island like we did with the county executive race last month. People need to want this. I sound like a coach, but it's not going to win itself. You know, people have to get involved. That includes candidates. That includes party officials. That includes citizens. So we have an opportunity here with the seat that George Santos was booted from. We have an opportunity here in the first district with that seat being up for re-election. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And do everything you can. Find out, just at least stay informed, but find out what the issues are that that will be front and center as far as platforms, and investigate, find out where they're coming from and who your elected officials will be.
Mm-hmm. Sports. Okay, we have a little bit of sports news here. 18-year-old Stony Brook University student won $100,000 to spend on his education after tossing the most footballs into a bin during a halftime competition at Friday's Pac-12 championship game, which did not include Stony Brook. It happened in Las Vegas. In 30 seconds, Muhammad Adam threw more footballs into one of two large bins branded with the logo of soft drink Dr. Pepper, the tuition giveaway sponsor, then his opponent, who was a University of Florida pharmacy student, who took home $20,000 for finishing second. Adam said it was very nerve-wracking before the game, but I feel very grateful and very blessed to have won this scholarship. Each applicant was required to upload a video stating their career goals and why they needed tuition assistance. The contest was open to anyone between the ages of 18 and 24. Adam said he does not have student loans, but plans to use the money for law school. He's a son of Egyptian immigrants. He said he wants to study immigration law to help others in the immigrant community. I have a lot of respect for immigrants, he said. I think it's one of the key characteristics of the American identity. He does not play any sports. You know what, Muhammad Adam, I'm going to suggest that maybe you join the Stony Brook football team. You know, I mean, look, you have demonstrated that you can throw a football and throw it at a particular target. That's an important part of the game. In fact, that's most of the game, pretty much. I didn't say I liked the game. I just think he'd be a good candidate for it. And what was the Stony Brook's record this year? What was it, 0-10? I mean, come on, what do you got to lose? Try it out. You know, it's consider it just a fun pastime or something like that. But congratulations, 18 years old, $100,000 for throwing a football into bins.
Yeah, really fantastic work.
Yeah.
And Huskies are going to the Sugar Bowl.
What does that mean?
13-0.
Who are Huskies?
Undefeated. What Washington Huskies.
Washington Huskies. What
yeah.
Are they? What kind of team are they? Where are they from?
The football team.
From what? The whole state of Washington?
No, the University of Washington.
See, these are the things I don't know. University of Washington, and a particular branch of the University of Washington, or the whole university system?
Just their team, yeah.
Okay, all right. And
there's all kinds of college football antics right now. I don't really follow it, though. I'm not a big sports guy.
Yeah, well, our football season tends to end early.
That's why this could develop into something, because that's a lot of throws. And I don't know. Stony Brook's coming up, though. I hear the band playing.
Well, with 0-10, they have nowhere to go but up.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, it takes a lot, though, and they've got a program, and I'm sure things will develop. The band sounds good, though. I hear the band.
The band is amazing, band. Yes.
They are outstanding. Uh-huh. You can hear it all around. It just, like, reverberates.
Yeah.
So they have the music on their side. And we like to think that we're a part of that here at WUSB.
Yeah, because we bring the music.
We are all about the music.
Uh-huh. We have more music in our studios than the music department.
Did you ever play an instrument?
I don't know if I can back that up, but I'm sorry, what?
Did you ever play an instrument?
The only instrument I really played well was the volume control of my stereo. That
okay.
was pretty much it. I didn't have
That's
any...
That's a good answer.
I mean, I have musical appreciation, which, you know, is just as hard as learning an instrument, I think.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not even close. No,
I'm going with it, though.
Absolutely. I've tried, you know. I really did.
Me too.
And for the life of me, I can't read music. I still think it's a big joke. I think they're just pretending they can read all that. Or A minor, a D plus, or whatever. I don't know what all those things are, but people do. And it just makes me realize that there are so many aspects to being human, so many things that, you know, somebody who is an expert in one field has completely no knowledge of. You know, I've had people who are medical people way up there, people who really can take apart somebody and put them back together, who have no idea how to make a phone call, you know, how to choose a long distance carrier. I'm not saying those two skills are equivalent in any way, but when you see somebody who is completely helpless in that realm, it just makes you realize, wow, we all have our specialties. Some of them are worth a whole lot more than others, yes, but nobody knows it all.
And blind spots. Mm-hmm. But that is so wonderful. I love hearing that, and it is very, very true.
I wish I knew an instrument, you know?
I took a little percussion in school, but I was doing other things, and I was part of a lot of like stage stuff, dance, and I did a little bit of voice stuff. But I remember this one summer, I got signed up for a workshop to play steel drums, and that was confusing.
Wow.
It was really cool, but I was it was totally foreign to me, and I wasn't that good at percussion. I mean, I didn't get that far because I didn't get evolved that far because I was doing other productions. I kind of got out of it early on. But the steel drum class, they had the notes, like you have all the keys and everything, but it's like they had little cheat sheet, like it was written on the different parts of the steel drum. But
really? So you know where to hit?
I think there was helper stuff there, but it was still very hard to get it down, like just moving your hands around inside the drum and lining that up with everyone else and then what you're hearing, and it takes a lot of coordination.
You know, I always thought, I'm thinking back. I always thought I could play, you know how when you watch an orchestra, and they're playing something like, say, 1812 Overture, sometimes they have this big gong in the middle of the orchestra. I could do that. I could hit the gong. I'm pretty sure I could get that right. I could pace it so that it works. Hit it with just enough momentum.
I've never struck one of those.
How do you study for that exactly? Is that a course at Stony Brook in the music department? Can I just study gong and, you know, become the gong person around the neighborhood? If you need somebody to hit the gong, I can do it.
It's definitely a concentration within multi-instrumental percussionist.
I don't need to know all that.
I made all that up. I made that
gong.
Up.
I'm going to make a phone call tomorrow morning to the music department and see
if they need a part-time gong guy.
Well, not if they need it so much, but just, you know, how I would go about pursuing that degree of study.
Well, keep me updated. I want to know how that goes. That's a good idea.
I like coming up with new challenges here on the radio show. Though.
Please continue. I was listening to your story.
There is another a new challenge. Did you know that Long Island has a curling club? They took to the ice against a team from Nova Scotia. I knew they had multiple curling clubs. But Saturday night, the Long Island Curling Club, and I like how they call themselves that, the Long Island Curling Club, because that's what they are. You know, they're not the Long Island Huskies, Kyle. Well, you don't know what sport they're playing or anything else, but they're the curling club.
At least it's an actual thing. What's a sea wolf?
It's a sea wolf, first of all, and I'll thank you not to mock them.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
They have teeth. The Long Island Curling Club competed at a Syosset ice rink against the Windsor, which, if you don't know, is in Nova Scotia, the Windsor Curling Club for the 2023 Cardias Cup. Which is actually a wooden plaque in the shape of Long Island. So it sounds like we already have that wrapped up. If it's shaped like Long Island, I mean, Nova Scotia is kind of shaped like Long Island too, but if it's shaped like us, I think it's our cup no matter what. So curling is still a bit of a curiosity in the United States, but it has attracted some serious enthusiasts on Long Island. That's good to know because
it's taking off.
We have Canadian TV and we watch curling a lot. And I still don't understand it. It's kind of like watching cricket. I don't get that either. There's a lot of things I never get. A lot of things I try to get, but I never do. But curling, I kind of get it. It's like you have this tea kettle, and you're just pushing it down the ice, and there's a bunch of people sweeping the ice in front of it to get it to hit these other tea kettles that are sitting there from the other team and hit them in a certain way. And that's basically it. And, you know, there's not many people in the crowd, and pretty much people in the crowd can yell at the people who are playing, and they can yell back, and they know each other. It's generally played with four players on a team. Curlers scoot along the ice, kneeling low as they release a 44-pound polished granite stone. I called it a tea kettle. It's a granite stone, but it looks like a tea kettle. Aiming for a target at the far end of the ice, which is called a house. Yeah. The sweepers then move in, vigorously brushing the ice in front of the stone, which warms the ice and helps the stone glide along. The stone can be thrown, so it rotates and arcs as it glides, thus the name curling. And the closer the stone lands to the house, the more points the team earns. And as mentioned, there is often quite a bit of yelling involved. So the Long Island Curling Club was founded in 2008. It's out on the ice year-round, fielding up to 8 or 9 teams each season. Wow, 8 or 9 separate teams each season. Teams are mixed age, with participants ranging from preteens up to people in their 80s. Now that alone, makes it an interesting sport. Preteens and people in their 80s on the same team. I imagine you can mix them on the same team.
I also imagine that techniques vary across age and skill level.
Uh-huh.
And the launching alone, if you watch it, of the kettle, I mean, they have to get their balance, their nimbleness and speed, of course, they have to get low and kind of get themselves in like an aerodynamic glide alongside the thing. And then they just sort of, they don't launch it, they sort of just release it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like back off or go to the side, and then they start making their calls to the sweeper.
Thank you for calling it a kettle, by the way. Thank you. That makes me feel better.
Well, right, yeah, a kettle.
Instead of a stone.
But, did I say stone or kettle?
No, you
I
said
don't know.
Kettle. You said, I said kettle. Kettle. Okay, I say it looks like a tea kettle.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's called a stone. But I think, you know, kettle, why not call it that? Sometimes parents play on teams with their children, and people who use wheelchairs curl on teams with people who don't use wheelchairs. So that's awesome right there. Where do they play? They play at the Long Island Sports Hub in Syosset. And it's a rink that's used for hockey, but it's also used for curling. And they offer lessons every few months to the curling curious. Hey, you may see us out there. That might be something I can do. That might be something. A chess game on ice is how it's described, because you have to do all this figuring. And sometimes it takes a very long time to figure out how to make your shot. So games can go on for quite a long time.
Yeah, just understanding what you're going for and then having the physical and sort of tactical dexterity and coordination to put into action your plan after you've gained the knowledge. There's a lot to it. It probably takes a long time, a lot of learning, but it looks fun. It looks like you really just have to come with an interest.
Well, you know, so
it's cool that people are doing it.
This Newsday article I'm reading this from, I just went through the whole thing, and it doesn't mention who won the game. I guess that's not as important as in other sports. They talk about the sport. They talk about the competition that took place, you know, a day or two earlier, but they don't mention the score. Okay. You know what? Doesn't matter. Curling is on Long Island, and that's the other thing that I think would be really cool to have on Long Island. The kind of bowling they have in Boston. What's it called? Candle pin? Is it candle pin or candlestick? It's like bowling here, except it's about a third the size. The balls are tiny. The pins are tiny. The bowling alley is tiny as well. Think about it. You don't need as much space. You can carry your balls back and forth from the place you bowl in. And, when I was in Boston, I saw, women in their 70s. With their custom-made bowling balls, just casually going in and out of the place. So it's not a big deal. I think that could be very popular here. It could be popular everywhere.
Yeah, I remember when we stayed somewhere on our trip to Stonehenge, we had the chance to see, I think they had, next to the bar, they had like one rink for some kind of bowling.
I think it was probably something completely different.
No, it was candlestick.
Was it really?
Oh, fully. Yeah. We could probably go back and find the episode. Anyway, that's awesome too. The different versions of that stuff. But I'm, you know, I like that because even if you're not participating, you get to learn about them, and people have a good time cheering people on. Sometimes you can help out. I'm still available to judge pillow fighting, by the way.
You did that in the past. In fact, yeah. You could look it up on a previous show years ago, back in the early 20-teens, I believe, where Kyle was, in fact, pulled up on stage or whatever it was to judge a pillow fighting contest in Canada.
International debut.
That was a moment. Okay, so the climate talks were held the past week, the COP28 United Nations climate talks, held for some reason in the United Arab Emirates. And I say it like that because, well, you're talking about the climate. You're talking about all the harm that the fossil fuel industry has wrought upon the environment. And you hold it in a place that's kind of like, ground zero for that. Get this. The head of the United Nations climate talks, his name is Sultan Al-Jaber. Is Sultan his first name, or do we just not get to know his first name? He's a Sultan. Okay, fine. Sultan Al-Jaber happens to be the chief executive of the United Arab Emirates state-run oil company. And this guy is the head of the United Nations climate talks. That's not right. That's not right. I mean, everybody can see that's not right. Anyway, he's basically getting a bit of criticism for his remarks back in late November, where he stated there's no science that backs ending fossil fuels to save the environment. In other words, we can keep burning oil and gas and go merrily on our way, and the planet will be just fine. Yeah, there was pushback. It definitely was. He sought to clarify those comments in a press conference on Monday from the climate summit that he was presiding over, but his position as both chairman of a major Mideast renewables company and a CEO of Abu Dhabi's state-owned oil company has already drawn criticism and extra scrutiny of his role as this year's conference president, where he sets the tone and must unite countries around the common message and pledges. I don't know how much is going to be got out of this conference. Kind of glad Biden didn't go. He's got other things to worry about. It's kind of a farce, really.
Oh, I think that's all it is at this point. I really am so skeptical of anything that is coming out of a lot of these things. And I'm hopeful for the smaller actions that are at the local level that are growing, and regional choices and things that are able to persist amidst all of this. I think that's the hopeful thing. It's astounding to me how much actually does get done with this kind of leadership. Mm-hmm. It's not what we deserve or are asking for or demanding at this point. The world is just like so being let down by these industries that want to tag along or just basically keep doing what they're doing and benefit holding the mantle of what people want, but doing the opposite. With all they have control, all the influence and all their wealth, the choices are just to, maintain it.
This whole thing started when Ireland's former president, Mary Robinson, asked Al-Jaber to use his position to push for a global agreement to phase out fossil fuels. Such language wasn't included in the landmark 2015 Paris Climate Agreement and has been repeatedly blocked by petroleum-dependent countries at subsequent negotiations. And he responded by saying, "I respect the science, and there is no science out there or no scenario out there that says that the phase out of fossil fuel is what's going to achieve 1.5 degrees Celsius in reduction. In reality, the scientists warn that the only paths to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius requires phasing out fossil fuels, including oil, gas, and coal. Under the Paris Agreement, world leaders agreed to limit global warming to well below 2 degrees of warming, and ideally no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming compared to temperatures in the late 1800s. That's because Beyond 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, numerous climate tipping points loom, and millions of people are threatened by rising seas and extreme weather. Scientists warn the planet has already warmed about 1.1 degrees Celsius over the last 150 years, largely due to human activity. This is really all you need to know.
Yeah, I think the end is totally part of the disconnect here. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, we'll go on forever with this. We'll expend the energy, the fossil fuel energy, to go on forever and allow these other options to compete with our dominance, however futile, forever, and not actually transition to dominate, versus what people are asking for, which is, let's spend the fossil fuel energy resources retooling for an entirely different infrastructure to dominate that does not involve what you want to keep doing.
Absolutely.
It's a total disconnect.
And that's the United Nations. That's how things are working right now.
Hey, it's the local level keeps going on, and people do as much as they can, but it's not on them. Stop taking it on.
Look, it's one thing to debate over how to get someplace, but when you actually put somebody in charge who is obviously has conflicting interests, that's not the right move, and that's not how you progress in any way. Okay, and I guess that leads us over to the Mideast, which is always a fun topic to touch upon. I don't even know where to... We have so much to say and so much that we don't know. Did you see the hearings today? Hearings on Capitol Hill. Some university presidents were taken to task for demonstrations that were taking place on campus.
I was aware this was going to go on.
Yeah.
How did it go?
Well, fiery is what I heard. I didn't get to watch it myself, but... first of all,
that tracks.
The people in Congress, I think, are the last people to be lecturing anybody on anything, but that's just my personal opinion. That said, yeah, there have been some really shameful and stupid things being said, but I have to also say that there are a lot of really bad people on both sides, to sort of paraphrase Trump here. There are horrible people on both sides of this conflict. Deserve to be called out. I think it's possible to call everybody out here. For instance, there was and I don't have all the facts on this. I'm just, I looked up as much as I possibly could. There was a restaurant in Philadelphia called Goldie, part of a restaurant group co-owned by Israeli-born Michael Solomonoff. That was enough to draw a huge crowd of people outside it, chanting, "Goldie, Goldie, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide." It's one thing to be opposed to the Israeli government's policy, but to basically target a restaurant because it's owned by somebody who is Israeli? No, that is anti-Semitic. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And White House spokesperson Andrew Bates said it's anti-Semitic, completely unjustifiable to target restaurants that serve Israeli food over disagreements with Israeli policy. This behavior reveals the kind of cruel and senseless double standard that is a calling card of anti-Semitism. I mean, that's just, this is the hateful part of people who are opposed to what's going on in Gaza, and count me as one of the people opposed to what's going on in Gaza. But this is the wrong approach completely. And if you can't say that, if you can't call them out and say, this is wrong, this is anti-Semitism, I think you lose a lot of legitimacy and you can't really put forth your views without being thought of as complicit in this.
Yeah, I think that the scale, I mean, it tracks with the same kind of militant ideology that is sending rockets into commercial shipping traffic that's being targeted because of the shipping line owners. So bringing mobs to businesses that themselves are not involved in military activity, I mean, you're really setting up a scenario for something really tragic, and it's not actually going to fix the thing that you want to fix.
Right.
I don't think. It's a lot of hot air and passion, but it's really foul to be disrupting people who have nothing to do with it, really. Even isn't industry and businesses, arguably logistics, you could be transporting military things, but come on, that's not where the bloodshed is happening.
If the restaurant was an arms manufacturer, they're making food, for God's sake, selling takeout. Oh my God. How much more hateful can you possibly get? It's just ignorant. There are plenty of places to protest, plenty of people that you can point the finger at and say, you're complicit in this. But don't take it out on innocent people. Don't make kids who wear yarmulkes feel afraid. That's just wrong. How do you not see that?
Yeah.
And of course, the same goes both ways.
It goes all the way. Yeah.
Every time there's a demonstration against Israeli policy, referring to that as anti-Semitism is just, it's wrong. It's ignorant. It's manipulative. The people in the Mideast who are basically condemning the Jews, it's not the same thing as people in the 1930s in Germany condemning the Jews. The situation is completely different. Now, are there truly anti-Semitic people involved in that group? Yes, absolutely. But would they be demonstrating, or would the majority of people be demonstrating against the quote-unquote Jews were it not for the situation as it stands right now, i.e. the Palestinian situation? Were these people always hateful of Jews, or is it because the people who are basically controlling their land call themselves the Jews, and they are referring to them the way they call themselves? Kids are being brought up to hate them because they're the occupiers, and they're basically making their lives miserable. So it's understandable that there's hatred there, but is it the same as the kind of anti-Semitism that has existed for centuries? When you basically take any critic of Israeli policy and condemn them as anti-Semitic, I think you're watering down what anti-Semitism really is. It's a very real thing, and there is true hatred out there, but let's not mix it up. Let's not make it so that anybody who stands up for civilians who are basically being bombed into the Stone Age, condemning them as somehow being anti-Semitic is just so, so bad, so ignorant. So Netanyahu wants to stay in Gaza. Apparently he likes it so much there. He basically believes that the military has to retain open-ended security control over the Gaza Strip long after the war ends. And this is something that the United States is very much opposed to, and I'm with them on that. If there is a country that should not be in Gaza, it's Israel. Any other country, basically, I think, could do a better job controlling the situation to keep it from spiraling out of control. Look, Israel knew about the attack that took place on October 7th, an attack that I don't think we can condemn strongly enough. But remember, we're condemning it. So we also need to continue the conversation and not just stop there. There are all kinds of other things to condemn, namely 15,000 civilians dying in Gaza, people who had nothing to do with any of this. That is wrong. That is absolutely 100% completely wrong. It's got nothing to do with having the right to defend yourself. Yeah, you do have the right to defend yourself. But that's not defending yourself when you're killing 15,000 innocent people. Most of them kids. Most of them kids and women. It's shameful. It is absolutely shameful. And so many Israeli citizens agree with that. And they condemn it too. Netanyahu should not be in power. All right? First of all, the incredible intelligence lapse where they knew that this attack was being planned and they dismissed it as unrealistic. All right? Netanyahu facing prison for all the corruption he's involved in. And I keep hearing people, otherwise intelligent people, saying, yeah, he's corrupt, but there's a war going on and you can't get rid of him in the middle of a war. Well, don't you think that's exactly how he's thinking now? There's a war going on. As long as I keep the war going, I can't possibly go to prison. The guy is corrupt. The guy needs to go. That's the first step. The society's strong. They'll survive. But getting rid of somebody like that, he does not care about Palestinian lives any more than Hamas cares about Jewish lives, Israeli lives. So, yeah, let's get the cancer out of the region. Hamas, Netanyahu, they got to go. They got to go. And then the world needs to confer on this, because what was happening in the past clearly wasn't working. So let's try something else. Let's have an intelligent dialogue about this. And, you know, what they're saying here now, the people who are for Israel occupying Gaza, they're saying, oh, nobody else can do it right. No, the entire world, nobody else can do it right. It has to be us. No, it definitely should not be you. And the world has to get involved here. And I'm sorry if you don't like sometimes the world rules against you. You know, that's how it works. You win some, you lose some. Now, you know, recently we've seen these horrible accounts of sexual violence by Hamas on October 7th and beyond. And the world is hearing about this for the first time. Problem is, the international court can do something about this. Israel doesn't believe in the international court because the international court sometimes criticizes Israel. That's an avenue that's closed because they don't participate in international law on that level. Where in this particular case, that is exactly what it should be used for, to prosecute Hamas and all the people that were involved in that for war crimes. But if you don't believe in the system, you can't use the system. You see, and the system isn't always going to rule for you. That's something we know very well here in the United States, because we've gotten a lot of losses. But you got to keep believing in the system. Otherwise, what's the point?
Well, we're not part of the ICC, are we?
No, I don't think we believe in it either. That's another problem.
It's just a joke. I mean, farce is the word. All of it. It's hilarious. All the platitudes, all of the things we think. I do not want to even utter what I fear about all this. Like, it's so very, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to talk and reason, and I want no part of any of it at this point. If it's going to be reduced to all of these ends and power plays and age, I don't know. I think if you're devout and you believe in something all the way around, like, you need to consider what people who don't believe the same thing as you, what their place is and their say is in incredibly violent situations like this, because they have perspective too.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important that we just stay informed. We try not to let it drive us too crazy, and we listen to people. You know, one thing at Stony Brook, I think the dialogue has been kind of refreshing, where there isn't as much anger as there is openness to hearing different perspectives. At least that's how I see it. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what we need to do, is be open to being wrong, hear other perspectives, put forth your ideas and your observations. Extremely important. And there have been positive developments. For instance, just today, the United States says that extremist West Bank settlers will be barred from coming to the United States. All right, you know, that needs to be focused on, because what's not being talked about in the media is the amount of Palestinians being killed in the West Bank, where the invasion isn't taking place. It just attacked by settlers and by the army. It's something definitely worthy of condemnation. And by keeping those people from coming to the United States, the United States is taking a stand. Now, there was a story recently, and we're going to have to go in a minute, but Muslim leaders in swing states are pledging to abandon Biden over his refusal to call for ceasefire. Well, first of all, he is calling for a ceasefire. Second of all, that is the dumbest thing ever, because if you get rid of Biden, you get Trump. And if you get Trump, remember who set this up in the first place. Who moved the Capitol in Israel? All right. I mean, not the Capitol, the embassy. Who moved the embassy in Israel? It was Trump who did that. Who abandoned the Palestinians? Trump and Netanyahu. They set this up. Don't forget that. And if you bring him back, it's going to be more of the same. So, yeah, you might not like what Biden has said. You might not like that he is unequivocally for Israel and all that. But you have to do some calculations here as to which would be much worse than the other. And then when you get the lesser of two evils, you work with that to make that better.
Yeah, beware of all elements of extremism, and especially transnational extremism, the kind that knows no boundaries.
Hey, we got to go. Hey, Mr. Edison is filling in for Finn tonight, so that's going to be fun. Be sure to listen to that. If you didn't appreciate Shane McGowan of the Pogues when he was alive, well, listen to this piece now. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, yeah, OTW at 2600.com, and please pledge WUSB.FM. See you next week.
Are the lights that buy the house and the Yanks they were within? And the tinker boys, they hissed advice but were with a pen. Well, we turned and shook as we had a look in a room where the dead man lay. So big Jim Dwyer made his last trip to the shores where his father's lay. But 15 minutes later we had our first taste of whiskey. There was uncles giving lectures on ancient Irish history. The men all started telling jokes and the women they got frisky. By 5 o'clock in the evening every bastard there was pesky. Pretty well gone away, there's nothing left to say. Farewell to New York City boys, the Boston NPA. He took them out with a woolen cloud and I often heard him say, I'm a free-born man of the USA. He fought the champ in Pittsburgh and he slushed him to the ground. He took on Tiny Tartanella and it only went one round. He never had no time for rights, for drink or dice or horse. But he never threw a fight when the fight was right, so they sent him to the war. Very well gone away, there's nothing left to say. We're staunching Joe and an Aaron Gomer, loves in America. The calling of the rosary, Spanish wine from far away. I'm a free-born man, love the USA. Yeah! I always love you, I always did, I always will. Very well gone away, there's nothing left to say. But to say adieu to your eyes as blue as the water in the bay. To big Jim Dwyer, a man of war who was often heard to say, I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man of the USA.
Hi, we're Da Vinci's Notebook, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
That sounds forced.
Of course it does.
Hi.
All right. Okay. It's too forced.
Actually, this is
forced.
A very good bumper
this
here.
This is it. This is your bumper.
All right.
Ready.
All right. Three, two.
Hi, we're Da Vinci's Notebook.
Rob.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Stony Brook.
Was that good?
Let's
sing it.
I have a question.
Stony Brook, New York.
It's here on the hat.
You can go www.stonybrook.com.
Hi, we're Da Vinci's Notebook, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Oh, that was bad.
Let's try another one.
Okay. It's a good thing we're not getting paid for this.
Let's trade off words.
I would feel cheated.
Hi, we're Da Vinci's syllables.
Hi.
We're
Da
Vinci's
Notebook.
Hey, does anyone else besides you two get to play?
No. All right, we'll go this way.
Hi.
We're
Da Vinci's
Notebook
from Washington,
D.C.
on
W.U.S.B.
Stony
Brook.
Ta-da! Okay, right. Let's do a quick actual musical tag, like W-U-S-B.
Let's not do a standard.
Okay.
W-U-S-B Stony Brook,
New York.
Ta-da! There's a winner.
Beautiful.